Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life, from maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest today is Derry musician Richard Moore, who at the age of 10 in 1972 was blinded by a rubber bullet from a British soldier's gun as he walked home from school. In 1996, Richard set up the charity Children in Crossfire in a way to give back and pass on the support and kindness that he received as a young blind man growing up in Derry to children who are caught up in the crossfire of poverty around the world. Through Richard's chosen tracks, we are taken on a journey from life as a young boy growing up in Derry before the troubles started, living through them as a young blind man, setting up his charity Children in Crossfire, reflecting on the forgiveness and compassion that he was shown from his parents, passing on those values to his two daughters who mean so much to him, oh, and not forgetting his love of music too. Hello, Richard, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby. Yeah, it's great to be here, and thanks for asking me. It's great. I'm looking forward to it.
Richard, how did you find it selecting your tracks?
I find that really challenging. I'm a musician, and I love music. I absolutely love music. And I suppose, like, people talk about their favourite songs, and I kind of probably have a favourite 100 songs, and then songs are sort of favorites for different reasons. So you would be thinking about a song because you know maybe enjoyed when I played in a band, I like playing the song particularly, and maybe I like a song, I'm a guitar player, so I love the guitar solos in it, or you like a song for some other reason, maybe a time in your life, a memory. For me, music is very much a photograph, and sometimes you just conjure up images or memories from a time in your life. So there's so many songs you like for so many reasons. So I found it very challenging.
Your first track, Richard, takes you back to life in Derry before you lost your sight. And I believe it was also before all the troubles. What was life like in Derry for you growing up?
Do you know, I was born in 1961. And so the conflict in Northern Ireland didn't really start till around 68, 69. That's when I say the conflict, and as we know it today now, that what became known as the Troubles. So for that, I lived in a housing area, you know, social housing area up in the Craigan Estate in Derry. Derry is a city where it has a river going through the middle of it, and the city, each side slopes down towards the river. So I lived in the Craigan Estate, which was up on the height, and you slope down from the Craigan down to the bog side, right down to the city centre and the river and all there. It's beautiful. And the Craigan was beautiful. You know, it was a lovely place to live. And, you know, as a young boy, I come from a big family, Toby. Mm-hmm. Like, there's 12 children in our house, 9 boys and 3 girls. I was the second youngest. We lived in a 3-bedroom house. My father was an unemployed shoemaker. My mommy was what the Americans would describe nowadays as a homemaker. You know, my mommy just, you know, and it was a lovely, warm, caring home. And I mean, everybody lived in what you might describe as relative poverty in those days. There was no frills, no restaurants, no holidays, you know. But in another way, you wanted for nothing. And, you know, I can remember out in the street playing football with my friends. I was a football fanatic, and all your games were on the street. Again, back in those days, not too many people had cars. So, like, you would have had the whole road to play football on because nobody parked their cars. There wasn't that many cars parked. And all your games that you'd done as a child were on the street or on the road or around a lamppost. So I remember Derry and I remember Craigan before the conflict. And then what just seemed like overnight to me, Derry and the Craigan became like a war zone.
And I know we've seen all those images from films and TV shows about life in Ireland. Are they a true, you know, sort of representation of what life was like?
Well, it depends which one you watch. You know, I participated in different programmes myself over the years because of the nature of how I lost my sight. And some of them were maybe a bit more dramatic, a bit more orchestrated than what they should be and edited in such a way that painted a certain image. But quite a lot of them are very accurate. And the bottom line was, it was like a war zone. There were shootings, there were riots, there were bombings on a daily basis. You know, and I can remember as a young boy, and I had my sight at this stage, and I remember seeing IRA men patrolling our streets, literally walking around like something you'd see, say, in the Middle East or whatever, you know, these guys walking around with assortments of rifles, wearing masks or balaclavas and stuff like that. They're patrolling the streets. I saw IRA checkpoints where they would be there stopping the cars coming out in of the area. You know, and I even remember going down and holding a Thompson submachine gun one day. But, you know, if a journalist had got a picture of that, it would have been, here's a young guy, you know, a young boy, child, you know, holding a weapon or, you know, being trained up or whatever. And that wasn't the case. What I was doing was I was standing there and I was curious. And it just says, you know, can I hold your rifle? And I'd give it to you for a second. You know, and that's literally what it was. But, you know, you can't underplay it either. It was a troubled area. You know, the smell of CS gas in the air, the sounds of shooting incidents. I remember one night standing on our street with my friends. It was about maybe 6 o'clock in the evening. Just began to get dark. It was a winter's night. And we counted 9 bombs exploding in the city centre. So, like, that's not normal. That's never normal, but it felt normal. And that's what a lot of these documentaries don't capture. They capture the fact that a bomb's going off, which is crazy, and we all know that. But at the same time, that them bombs could have been exploding while you were in the middle of playing some Red Rover, we want Toby over a game, or you know, hide and go seek, or whatever, you know.
Matthew, Southern Comfort and Woodstock there, and different memories, I suspect, of life for you, Richard. The next track you have chosen, Richard, is, I believe, one of your parents' most favourite tracks, and it's by Frank Sinatra. How much of a part did your parents play in your life when you were growing up?
My parents, to me, you know, as you know, I lost my sight through being shot in the conflict as a 10-year-old boy in Derry. And, you know, my parents, my mother's brother was shot dead on Bloody Sunday, which was January 1972, and then I was blinded in May 1972, all at the hands of the British Army. You know, I was shot in a school football pitch by a rubber bullet. I was hit by a rubber bullet fired by a British soldier. My mammy's brother, my Uncle Jared, was shot dead. 35-year-old father of 8 children, you know, widely was at a civil rights march, which became known as Bloody Sunday. So in that regard, you would think, well, it's understandable that my parents would be bitter, that they would be angry, that they would develop a hatred. And they were the complete opposite. There was no anger, there was no bitterness, and no hatred. And, you know, they were trying to manage, you know, 12 children in the middle of that whole experience, in the middle of a conflict and everything that comes with that. But my parents managed to keep a lid on all of that and managed to convey a sense of forgiveness, a sense of love, a sense of compassion, and a faith as well. Like, my parents had enormous faith. And, you know, they weren't Bible punchers. They weren't ramming the faith down our throat. They just loved their faith every day. Even my mammy died when she was 95 years of age, back in 2015. And you would have went into our house, even up to then, and my mammy would have been sitting with her prayer book. And my daddy died 6 years after I was shot in 1978. But you went into our house and my mammy would have been sitting with her prayer book. She prayed a lot. And, you know, I can remember family parties. And, you know, the Irish love their parties and love a bit of crack and all that sort of stuff. And I always remember my mammy or my daddy, even before I lost my sight, and they would be singing South of the Border down Mexico Way. And every time I hear that song, even thinking about it now, talking to you about it, Toby, I have a lump in my throat. Yeah. I genuinely do.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, when you think about it, I owe them an enormous amount, because my ability to deal with blindness, my ability to forgive the British soldier, my ability to get on with the rest of my life, I was so blessed with that security, that secure base that I had in them too.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
Oh, Blue Eyes there, and South of the Border. Richard, the next track you have chosen sort of, I suppose, is all about Derry, really. And for those of us, as I say, looking in from the outside, what was life like in Derry at that time? Because I believe it was around the time when you were actually shot and lost your sight.
I mean, I picked the track, The Town I Love So Well, for a number of reasons. One, I love, as I mentioned earlier, I love music and I love Irish music. And I actually think that song is one of the best Irish songs ever written. And that's, I suppose I am coming out with a level of prejudice, but because I'm from Derry and the song's about Derry. The song's called The Town I Love So Well. And, you know, Derry is a town that I do love so well. But it's also written by a Derry man called Phil Coulter. And Phil Coulter would have been a guy that wrote Puppet on a String. He wrote My Boy, sung by Elvis. A song that's played at every royal event, any big event in the world. Congratulations, he wrote that. So, and you know, we're all very proud of Phil Coulter in Derry as a songwriter. In fact, where I'm talking to you from now, he lived probably about a couple of hundred metres from where I'm sitting here. But the song itself tells a story. And, you know, it's very important that people listen to the lyrics of it, because it takes people on a journey from what Derry was like before the conflict. You know, in my memory, I will always see the town I love so well, where our school played ball by the Gashyard Wall. The Gashyard Wall is literally 5 minutes walk from where I'm sitting as well. And it talks about the shirt factory horn and the woman, you know, basically all worked in the factories. I remember as a young boy, like watching all the women, and they used to wear the factory overalls, all going to their work, and their hundreds going down into the factories. All the people at Craigan, it was basically where the only jobs going worth talking about. And there wasn't a lot of work for men. So there was high unemployment among men. And, you know, we men took the dog, greyhounds, and training greyhounds and racing greyhounds was a big thing here. And again, the Brandywell area is not too far from where I am at the minute. So that song just captures all of that. And then it talks about the music. Derry's a musical city. It's known for its music. And, you know, Phil Coulter in that song talks about, you know, him being a musician, and talks about, you know, the first time he played in the back of a pickup van and all that sort of stuff. Everybody in Derry can relate to that. But I would say everybody in Ireland can relate to that at those times. And then it takes you on to when things began to change. But when I returned, how my eyes had burned to see how a town could be brought to its knees. And that's what happened. Derry was brought to its knees, you know. And he talks about, you know, their armoured cars and their tanks and their guns. Oh my God, what have they done? In many ways, again, it reflected the sadness and the tragedy of Derry. So, you know, I have the privilege in many ways of living through Derry during all the times, you know, when there was no conflict. And then I suppose you couldn't say it's a privilege to live through a conflict, but it's just when you listen to that song that you can relate to everything that's in it. And I picked the song because it captures the atmosphere, I think. And it's very hard to capture the atmosphere in song and music and lyrics. But Phil Coulter has done it remarkably well in this song. And then, you know, I think everybody in Derry had hope. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, in the middle of the conflict, in the middle of the tragedy, in the middle of the sadness, people still had a spirit, you know, a spirit that couldn't be broken. So in the middle of the poverty, in the middle of the high unemployment, in the middle of conflict, in the middle of all the worry that comes with that, and the violence that everybody witnessed, and the hurt and the pain that everybody witnessed, there was still a spirit there that couldn't be broken. And that's why I picked that song, because, you know, when you ask me to pick songs that are the tracks of my life, then, you know, that's that song to me is something that it'll never date. And it tells an incredible story over the 6 or 7 verses of it.
How much did Derry being the first European city of culture in 2013 have an effect on the city?
Oh, it was brilliant. It was fantastic because, you know, again, it was a symbol of how far we've come. You know, the Derry today from the Derry that I grew up on as a child is very different. You know, you have tree-lined streets, you have lovely walks along the river. You know, you can walk across the new Peace Bridge that's there, and you walk over to a place called Ebrington Square, which used to be an army installation. It's bigger than Trafalgar Square. And, you know, it used to be just an army camp in the city, right smack in the city centre. Now you're walking over to this shared space, a big open space where there's some restaurants and, you know, coffee shops, and people just go over there on a summer's day. Like, I would go out from work here, for example. And you probably gather by now, where I work is, you know, more or less right in the city centre. And I can walk from here and down over the Peace Bridge and walk into Ebrington Square, and I can have my sandwich with me or go to one of the restaurants there and buy something and sit out. And, you know, the City of Culture in 2013 was another representation of how we are now a normal city with so much to offer.
In my memory, I will always see the town that I have loved.
Phil Coulter there, and the town I love so well. Richard, your next track marks the setup of your charity, Children in Crossfire. Why did you want to set up the charity, and what do you think are the main successes and achievements of the charity so far?
After I got shot and all that, I went back to, for want of a better expression, normal school. So I went back to the primary school I was at when I was shot. Then I went on to the secondary school, which was right beside the primary school. And then I went on to university, got my degree and all that sort of stuff. And I was compensated by the British government for being shot. And with half the money, I bought a house. And with the other half, I bought a pub. And 2 years later, I bought a second pub. So by the time I was 20 years of age, I owned 2 pubs in the city of the centre of Derry. And I had an office above one of the pubs. So when I came out of university, I went straight into an office and began to run my own business for about 14 years. Now, at some point in my life, and I can't remember when, maybe it was at university or maybe slightly after that, I began to think about, why am I so happy? Why am I so content? And blindness wasn't an issue for me. I was a guitar player. I was playing in a band. I had a recording studio at home. I had my own business. I run a folk choir that sing at mass every Saturday night. And that was a very busy, active life. And really, blindness didn't challenge me. And I don't in any way want to take away from people out there who are suffering or find blindness challenging. I understand that. And I actually question why I wasn't feeling like that. And I boiled it down to a number of things. The fact that I come from a good family, the fact that I come from a good community, the fact that I had opportunities available to me, even as a blind person. I was able to go back to school and get an education for myself. And then, of course, the lack of anger and the lack of bitterness or hatred and the presence of forgiveness in my life. But it's that opportunity thing. I began to realize, you know, no matter how difficult it is, every child, given the right opportunity in life, could grow and blossom. And I thought, you know, I would like to give back some of what I received. I was on the receiving end of so much kindness, so much generosity, so much love and compassion in my life. And I just think any child, given that level of support, could grow and blossom and could contribute in a positive way to their own life and the lives of other children or their families or their community or whatever. So I sold out the pubs and I set up Children in Crossfire. And I picked the name Children in Crossfire because my focus really was helping children in countries in Africa and Asia and South America who suffered from the injustice of poverty. So I called it Children in Crossfire because I believe the charity emerged out of the conflict in Northern Ireland. But as well as that, you know, children caught in the crossfire of poverty. You know, sometimes you don't have to have bombs or bullets flying over your head. They suffer. And there's children every day in the countries that I talk about who are suffering from not having access to food, from not having access to water, from not having access to medicine. And that's equally as devastating as a conflict or been caught in a conflict. So I thought Children in Crossfire would be the title of the charity. So, you know, the charity's going now 25 years, Toby. You know, the 20th of September 1996, I launched the charity. And over those 25 years, we have worked in countries throughout Africa and Asia and South America. Today, Children in Crossfire work in Tanzania and Ethiopia. Over the last 25 years, we've probably raised, you know, well over £40 million to help children develop in countries. And the song, A Price for Love, which I picked, was sung by a very well-known Irish singer-songwriter called Christy Hennessy. Christy's now passed away. He died in 2007. And he died young. But Christy is somebody that I met. And Christy himself has an amazing story. You know, he was illiterate, even though he was writing songs. And he became a patron, very kindly accepted to become a patron of Children in Crossfire. So he was our first patron. And he went to Africa with me. And we went to Kenya. At that time, we were supporting projects in Kenya. And one of the most amazing experiences for me, Toby, was, you know, sitting in the bush in Africa with Christy Hennessy. And he had his guitar out, and I had my guitar out. And there was another guy from Ireland out there who worked out there, a guy called Jerry McCarthy. And he played the guitar. And the three of us, nobody else, and it wasn't even recorded, just sat outside and under an African sky and played the guitar together. And it was just one of the most amazing memories for me. So when I talk about pictures, I can still see that night in my head when I hear that song. But Christy then was exposed and went and seen all the difficulty and the challenges that children were facing. And when he came back, he wrote that song. And, you know, so for me, it's a heartbreaking song because of Christy, you know, and he was a close friend and he was just an absolute gentleman. And it's also a song that was written about and and all the proceeds in this song went to Children of Crossfire, I should say, as well. But he wrote this song based on a trip to Africa with me in Kenya. So in that song, I feel that I was on the journey with him. And you know, it's very special, as you can imagine.
We need a plan to feed us, a helping hand to guide us.
Reprise of Love there by Christy Hennessy, who was the patron of Children of Crossfire. Richard, your next track is one from Jesus Christ Superstar, and one which I think you performed with and played in Derry. How did getting to perform and play on this musical come about?
Hey, well, you know, any musicians listen to this, you know, like it's you have pinnacles in your musical sort of career. Like, you know, when I was like, I suppose I would describe myself as semi-professional musician. It wasn't my main income, but I got paid for it. So I love playing the guitar. And, you know, and this guy, a Derry fella called Tony Carlin, was a, you know, a well-known musician around Derry. He wasn't famous or anything, but he's well-known in Derry circles. And his family is a very musical family. But he told me that he got the rights to put Superstar on in Derry. And it was a big thing for him because he always wanted to do it. And then he said to me, would you play the lead guitar on it? I couldn't believe it, you know. Now, I was, you know, I don't read music. And as you know, Jesus Christ Superstar is a musical. So I went down the path then of saying, right, I'm going to learn this musical off from beginning to end, from memory. And I kind of worked on the basis, I play in a band. We go out and do 2 and 3 and 4 hour gigs. And I memorize every song that we play in that band, like all the other musicians in the band. So why can't I do a musical in the same way? And that's my mentality. So I broke the musical down and the songs in a sense. And I learned them like that. And it took me a year to do it. For me, as a guitar player, it was just the highlight of my musical career, let's say, to be playing lead guitar in Jesus Christ Superstar in Derry. And it went on for 10 nights. It's not like these runs that you get in London or anything. You go on for 2 years or anything. It was 10 nights. And it was a complete sellout. 1,000 people in the auditorium, which is the biggest auditorium in Derry. And every night was a complete sellout. Standing ovations and all that. And I was there, part of that. So I picked that song because, you know, music and being a musician for me was very important. You know, as a young boy, you know, going to the youth centre or whatever it might have been as a blind boy, then, you know, it gave me status, Give me a purpose. I was playing in bands there and playing in, you know, small bands and stuff like that there. And, you know, we all sort of like these sort of feel like Jack the Lad or, you know, important or whatever. And I was feeling, you know, that music gave me a kind of a nonchalance, let's say, that was good for me and good for my confidence and good for my social life. And then, you know, to play lead guitar and, you know, probably the biggest musical at the time and the biggest musical ever put on in Derry. And I was a lead guitarist on it, you know, and, you know, to be playing front end, to be part of a 26-piece orchestra, to have memorized the show, and they stand up every night and take a bow and, you know, in front of a 1,000 people doing a standing ovation. It was just brilliant all round. You know, what's, you know, if Carlsberg could make, you know, musical memories, then that was one of the best for me, you know.
To do, how to move him. Julie Covington there, and I Don't Know How to Love Him from Jesus Christ Superstar, a great rock musical if ever there was one. Richard, I think your next track is dedicated to your two daughters, Niamh and Enya. And I think the song you played to them when they were babies and played to them when they were sleeping and stuff. How much do your daughters mean to you, Richard?
Well, I mean, the daughters are my be-all and end-all in many ways. Their happiness is my happiness. When they're about, I just focus on them. And my oldest daughter, Niamh, now is 32, and Enya, the youngest daughter, is 29. And they are also, you know, I suppose when they come into the world for the first time back, and well, Niamh was born in 1988 and Enya was born in 92. Sorry, Niamh was born in 1989 and Enya was born in 92. And, you know, you never realise what that means until you have a son or a daughter. I often think about what I meant to my parents. But, you know, having two children is a blessing. It totally is. Like, and I mean, that sounds like a cliche, but it really is. You know, they have them about your house, they, you know, when they go to school and all that sort of stuff, and all the joy that your children bring into your life. And Niamh and Enya are two fantastic young women now, and I'm very proud of them. You know, they're musicians, they play the piano and the flute, they sing as well. And, you know, Niamh's a teacher, music teacher, and Enya works in digital marketing and all that stuff. And, you know, and their happiness is my happiness.
So what is the track that you've chosen that is dedicated to your daughters, Richard?
It's Stuck on You, and the reason by Lionel Richie, and the reason why that song, we picked that song, is when they were young babies and you'd have them up on your shoulder and they're crying and you're trying to get them to sleep, every time that we put on that song, they went to sleep. And I can remember nursing Niamh, and she was only a few months old, and she was obviously hard to settle at that time. And I remember putting that song on and walking with her around the living room and her wee hand tapping my back almost in rhythm to the music. So that's why I picked that song, and it worked for both of them.
Stuck on you. Got this feeling down deep in my soul that I just can't.
Stuck on You by Lionel Richie there, and the song that is dedicated to your daughters, Richard. Now, Richard, we come to your final track, and I wondered, what is the track and why have you chosen it?
Well, it's Andy Williams and Moon River. It's an interesting song in a sense, because I kind of can, to some degree, pinpoint why I like it, but not always entirely. I just love the song, first of all. I love traveling. And I think this song, to some degree, sort of captures a spirit of sort of escaping and, you know, my huckleberry friend and all that. You know, Moon, I'm trying to mind some of the lyrics on it, but the song kind of represents a dream and living your dream. And running away and just a freedom in it. So I like it for that reason. It just represents the type of personality that I have. That song's kind of like a free spirit in it, you know, so I love it.
Well, Richard Moore, thank you so much indeed for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Toby. It was a real pleasure.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crying.